You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Talking about chicken a la king,
mango and garbanzo, tabbouleh,
little potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil,
zucchini ziti,
granola fruit bar. Yeah.
Look at all this beautiful food.
Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, the show where I interview amazing humans with amazing minds, and all I care about is what is in their fridge. Guys, my guest today, I'm so excited. He is one of my mentors and one of the main reasons I got into comedy. He's an Iranian-American comedian and actor with numerous stand-up specials on Netflix, Showtime, and more. He created and is the star of Jimmy Westwood, American Hero. He played Foz on Superior Donuts and appeared on Grey's Anatomy, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Detour, Last Man Standing, and Shameless. He is the author of the LA Times best-selling book, I Am Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, and he's the host of the Back to School podcast. Please welcome my good friend, Maz Jobrani. Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan.
Thank you for having me. What a great title.
We are very excited to have you.
Thank you.
We've eaten a couple times together, but outside of the eating, I don't know, a lot of the listeners might not know this, but Maz is probably the main reason I got into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've told you this before, but I was in college and I saw you perform and I sent you an email about, oh my God, I might want to do this. And I get these emails all the time and I always ignore them. You wrote back a 2-page thing about how to become a comedian, and it stays with me as one of the nicest things, probably the nicest thing any comedian has ever done for me. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, that just, a lot of comedians aren't nice, so that's a low bar that you've set. But no, I think if you can, and if you can share some of that knowledge, you do. And for me, it's very simple, right? Get on stage and write as much as you can. Just dive in. That's really it.
Right.
And it's interesting you say that, because I still get emails from people. And I still, if they sound serious or they're asking the right question, I'll just go back with, get on stage and write as much as you can. But then what's happened is, because of social media, there's so many people getting in touch from around the world. I get people writing to me from Iran saying, I want to be an actor in Hollywood. And I'm like, dude, you can't get a visa. Like, how are you going to do that? So a lot of those I do kind of ignore, because I go, I can't help this guy. I don't want to get into a conversation with him.
Yeah. Sorry, Hamid. Sorry, if you're listening, Hamid. Sorry that Maz hasn't got back to you.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
But now that I've built you up, I'm going to break you down.
Yes.
We're going to go into your fridge.
Let's go into the fridge, man.
You can see Maz's fridge on my Instagram at StandupDan. We are going to publish this. I don't know if you knew that we're going to
publish, man. I got no problem. My wife might get upset, but I'm okay.
We're going to put this on blast. So you have the fridge of an immigrant who's made it. That is the vibe I get.
I like that. I never thought of myself like that. Yeah.
I mean, you've got Erwan.
Erwan, definitely.
Erwan is like, you made it.
Yeah, Erwan up in the club. Erwan get hot. It's funny because Erwan, because people go Whole Foods, whole paycheck. Erwan makes Whole Foods look like the 99-cent store.
Absolutely.
Erwan, I walk into Erwan, I feel like I lost 100 grand or something. I feel more broke.
I went to Erwan for the first time last week. My girlfriend's an Erwaner.
Uh-huh.
And it's such a weird place. There's like rappers, like Nas was walking around.
Bro, it's a weird place, because I don't go in as much. My wife goes a lot.
Yeah.
And so exactly what you just said, I happened to be close to it the other day, and I just want to go to the salad bar. You walk in, there's all these girls dressed in their tight pants, like yoga pants, right? They're young, they're hot, there's good-looking dudes. There was a dude that was, I think my wife was said, like he even hit on her. Like, there's dudes hitting on each other, on girls and each other, whatever. And I was like, this is a scene, man.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And the food is so expensive, but I will say this, they have a lot of, I went in so cynical.
Yeah.
And they had, they, she blew my mind with this one thing. She's like, you have to have this. It's a, it's like a milk with algae in it, and it's blue. I was like, fantastic. Oh, you fucking LA.
You did it?
And I drank it, and I was like, how have I lived life without this algae?
See, I think that's one of the things that women can do for you is turn you on to things that are of quality. That's with my clothing too. I you know, I was never the person who would spend a lot of money on a pair of shoes or a jacket or whatever. And my wife has been the one who'll go, no, you should get that. And then I get it. And first of all, I go, oh, this is, you know, you're getting compliments. And secondly, it's good quality. So it lasts.
Yeah.
And so the same thing goes into the food stuff. You know, I think a lot of the stuff you saw, my wife will buy, you know, my wife's Indian originally. And yes. So she kind of likes to cook in that world. So she'll buy these different pre-made broths that she puts into pasta for the kids or whatever. And a lot of times when I taste it, I go, holy moly, what is that? So yes, it's a little expensive, but it tastes good and it feeds four of us.
It's delicious. And so this is interesting because you straddle a little bit of immigranty and non-immigranty, because it's not just Air One. You have a lot of stuff in Tupperware, which makes me think that there's a lot of cooking going on.
Oh no, let me tell you about the Tupperware. So the Tupperware comes from, again, my wife does a lot of yoga. And so she met this other woman who's from India originally. And, you know, they're Indian Americans, so they've grown up in America. But I think they were either – my wife was born in India. She left when she was 6 months old.
Right.
This other lady, I don't know her background, but she basically is this woman who I think is, you know, in a good place financially, has kids, and she – I don't know if it says. I guess it's a job. It's not a full time job, but it's kind of like a hobby on the side that she basically cooks a lot of healthy vegetarian type Indian based meals.
Yeah,
and so my wife has actually helped her, like turned her on to a lot of people. So what she'll do is she'll cook four or five things of Tupperware, send it to us, and you put it in the fridge. And I feel good whenever I eat it. So first of all, since the new year started, I've been trying to snack less, drink less alcohol, all of the above. Not that I was, you know, drinking and passing out, but towards the end of last year, especially I was on tour and all this other stuff, you know, I'd run into a scone. I'd be like, I got to eat the scone.
Yeah.
End of the night, I'd be wherever I am around the world.
A glass of wine.
Glass of wine. It was happening. And so my weight has always, you know, been between 175, 185 in that range. So I was kind of in that 185, 186 plus range. And so at the new year, I said, you know what? I'm going to drop 10 pounds, go back to 175. So I've been really trying to be good with not having the popcorn and the chocolate and everything else that leads to that road of not eating, you know, well. So when we get these Tupperware filled with the vegetarian Indian food, again, I don't know the calories of it, but I feel relatively healthy when I eat it. And then with the kids, she'll give them the rice. I try to lay low on the rice. As an Iranian, that's almost sacrilegious.
That is sacrilegious.
But that's what I do, bro.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So it's kind of like a Postmates, but it's like someone who just makes
it. I'm telling you, your girlfriend turned you on to that blue drink. You should turn your girlfriend on to this lady. Her name's Archie. You got to turn her on to this.
I think I will, because she's an actress and she never is home or cooking.
Yeah.
So she never has like good food at home.
Dude, it's amazing. Everyone we've told this lady about has loved it. And the food is, you know, you could tell her, look, I want more spicy, less spicy, whatever it is. And it's just, and literally what we do, we don't even microwave it. We have this really big pan, this heavy pan, one of these like iron pan, you know.
Cast iron pans. Seal it, yeah.
And we'll just take, I'll scoop a little bit of every flavor that she's got there. There's some mushrooms there. There's some whatever it is, potatoes, Brussels sprouts, whatever it is. But it's all flavored with
Indian spices.
The flavors of India. Yeah. And I'll just put it in there. I'll cook it heat it up for like three, four minutes. Eat it, and I feel good.
I love it. Indian food is the only food that I feel like if I were going to go vegetarian, I could eat that and not miss meat. Because they know their way around a vegetable.
They know their way around. And the fact is, listen, it's funny because a few times where I've said, okay, I'm going to try this vegetarian thing. A lot of times, this is before, I would be like, well, since I'm a vegetarian, then I can have a muffin because it's good, you know, like it's vegetable.
Right.
But the fact is that I have not I don't cook. So, and I'd like to at some point, because I...
It's too late. If you haven't yet, it's
no,
done.
I think...
Your days are over.
Listen, there are times, like just this past weekend, I thought, because I eat out all the time. So whether it's at a Whole Foods or it's like at a Sweet Fin, is it called Sweet Fin?
Yeah, the Poke Place.
Yeah, Poke Place, or Larchmont Deli has a great sandwich, whatever that is. I'll eat out a lot.
Yeah.
And so the other day I woke up and I've got slightly high cholesterol, so I've been doing a lot of the oatmeal in the morning. And I thought, wow, instead of oatmeal, let me just do some eggs. And then I got to do egg white. So then I said, let me cook for the kids as well. So I just went in the fridge and I put it together. And every time I cook, I go, wow, this is a lot easier than I thought.
Absolutely. It is a lot easier. And if you stick with a couple of find your things that you're good at, and then you can look like, I make this braised short rib thing. That sounds very intimidating. When I make it for people, they think that I'm a fucking Michelin starred chef.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing you could ever make.
Yeah.
But it took a couple tries to get right.
Yeah.
You got to have that one go-to.
Bro, it's funny because we bought a barbecue years ago because we thought, oh, we'll just barbecue from time to time.
Yeah.
And that thing just sat there and nobody used it because I was intimidated by it.
Yeah.
And then one time I got this friend of mine because I spent my junior year abroad in Italy.
Yeah.
And there was a friend back there in Italy who was always in this dorm we lived in. He was a great cook. He was always cooking. So he comes to Venice for whatever, a few days with his family. They're staying in some apartment. He hits me up. He's like, you want to come? We're going to be going to the beach and then I'm going to barbecue. Great. Let's do it. We go upstairs. I take the kids. We go upstairs to his little rooftop thing in Venice overlooking the beach. And he's got these steaks and he's got this chicken and he gets the grill going. And I'm telling you, within 5 minutes, the food was ready.
Yeah.
And I go, that was easy. And he goes, yeah, just, you just put a little pepper or whatever, throw it on. And I'm going, God, why have I been so afraid of barbecuing? And it's you're intimidated until you do it.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm getting at is I feel right now, I run around so much. You know how it is. It's the life of a comedian. And,
yeah.
By day, we're trying to develop stuff or doing interviews or whatever. And by the time I get home, I'm kind of like, I just want to chill and relax and what have you. But there are times when, when I was in Italy that year, I was cooking at night and it was a lot of pastas and stuff.
Yeah.
But you get the pasta going, you open up that bottle of wine, you got your music going.
Hell yeah.
My wife, listen, they say you marry the woman who reminds you of your mother. My mom never cooked.
And really?
When I married my wife, she didn't cook. And it wasn't until we had kids that she started cooking. And now my mom as well, later in life, has started cooking. So it's just interesting to me because now that my wife cooks, she does a great job. And so she'll put her podcast on.
Yeah.
She's listening to her Oprah podcast and she's cooking up a storm and I love it.
I love it. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back to Maz Jobrani. So this is very exciting for me because you're the first Iranian guest that I've had on the show. And
wow.
And I didn't see any Iranian anything in your fridge.
Yes.
And I'm not hating you on that. I don't think if you looked into my fridge, you probably wouldn't know. I do have a big thing of torshi on the top.
I was about to say that.
You have the Persian pickles.
Yeah.
Growing up in a Persian household, I'm surprised that your mom wasn't cooking a lot because every Persian mom seems to be in the kitchen all the time.
A couple of comments. First of all, the torshi is interesting because the torshi, for people that don't know, it's when you get you get all these vegetables, you put in vinegar, and it's basically,
It's a pickle.
It's pickle.
It's a
pickle.
Cold pickle, though, which is different from American pickles where they actually heat up the vinegar and then they put the vegetables in.
Yeah.
We just keep it cold
yeah.
and leave it for years and years.
And it's delicious. And you can put garlic in there. You could put cauliflower. You could put eggplants, all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And it really is this sour, vinegary taste that adds flavor to the food that you're eating.
Yes.
So it's funny you say the torshi because my mom had brought some to our house and it was this big jar that they gave me, and it was just sat in the back.
Yeah.
But what happened is every time I'd eat the Indian food, I'd pull some torchy out as well.
Yeah.
And so I was mixing these flavors, and it was a party, man.
I love it.
And I ran out, so that's why it's not in the picture. But yeah, growing up in my family, we always either had, so in Iran, I was only there till I was 6 years old, but in Iran, we actually had a cook. You know, we were, my father was a successful businessman, and so there was a guy who was the cook of the house, and my mom never had to learn to cook at that point. Then we come to America, and my grandmother lived with us. She would cook. Then my grandfather started living with us. He would cook.
Wow.
So they were always cooking Persian food. It was always, the base is always rice, as you know, which is fine when you're in your 20s and you're, you know, burning, your metabolism burns it off in 5 minutes.
Right.
But as you get older and you realize, oh, wow, all this rice can't be good for you. But the, you know how it is. The broths are delicious. I mean, Persian food, in my opinion, is one of the best foods in the world.
Yeah.
And
most misunderstood. It's very different from other Middle Eastern food. The best way I describe it to people who've never had Persian food is, imagine Indian food, but substitute herbs for spice.
Exactly. It's just not spicy, and that's what it is. And it's interesting because a lot of people haven't even delved into that world because I don't think we've been here long enough as a culture. Like Japanese food, sushi crossed over, so everybody knows sushi. Indian food has now crossed over. Persian food has not crossed over. It has in LA, it has in some other places, but there isn't the small, quick, go in, get out. I mean, now there's like that place Creation, which I believe was started by an Iranian person because I've seen some Persian-based foods in there, or Earth Cafe. With Earth Cafe doesn't have any Persian foods, but I should say Panini Cafe. Panini Cafe is another Persian-based thing that people almost don't even know it's Persian because you go in and you just get rice with barbecue chicken and all that, and you go, "This is fantastic."
Yeah,
but the food is delicious. As a matter of fact, years ago there was an interview being done on NPR about this book. This couple had written a book. It was called "Around the World in 80 Diets," and the interviewer asked them both. They said, "What was the best food?" And one of them said, "Listen, we went all over the world, and my favorite food was Persian food. And because there's pomegranates and there's walnuts, you know, fesanjun is one of the best things in the world."
Oh, yeah. Fesanjun is basically a pomegranate stew, which initially is meant to be with duck, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which makes a lot of sense because duck usually goes well with sweet flavors.
Uh-huh.
But I think here it's mostly with chicken.
Yeah.
Which is, and it's super delicious. Doesn't look good.
Doesn't look good. It's brown.
It's brown.
Yeah.
And it's mushy.
Yeah.
But you put it over rice and it's magical.
Amazing. Our food is really amazing. But what happens is a couple of things. First of all, because it's usually based with rice at the bottom of it, it's a heavy meal, right? So again, like I said, we're, you know, we got two kids, they're young, my wife's cooking and, you know, trying to keep it fresh and what have you. So, and she doesn't really cook Persian food, but a lot of it is kind of like she'll get these jars of stuff that are made at Erewhon that are healthy and just put it into it. But once in a while, what'll happen is I will go to a Persian restaurant and I'll get, like, if I had just been the Persian restaurant recently, you would have seen those styrofoam to-go containers they give you, right?
Yeah.
And my kids love Persian food. That's probably their main tie to being Iranian,
right?
Is they love tadig.
That's tadig. Really, tadig is I think, the best gateway drug to Persian food.
Yeah.
It's basically the bottom of the pot. It actually means bottom of the pot in Farsi. And what happens is when you're making Persian rice, you put in a boatload of either oil or butter.
Yeah.
Which is, that's also interesting to me, is that there's a lot of variations within like the religious communities of Iran. Like there's Persian Jewish cuisine, there's Persian Muslim cuisine.
Yeah.
And so Persian Muslims typically will do theirs with butter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Persian Jews will usually do it with oil. But you create this crust from the weight of the rice and also just the slow cooking in the oil of the bottom of the rice, and it becomes this hard, delicious heaven.
Of rice and oil.
Of rice and oil.
Yeah.
And it's different from, because everyone, like, I'll always tell Korean friends, and they'll be like, "Yeah, we have the same thing." I'm like, "Nah, bro.
No.
Not even close."
Yeah.
It's like, it's, I don't even, it's like, it's this savory rice cracker crumble Rice Krispies treat.
That is, it's great. It's really, it's delicious. And then again, if you take like a fesenjoon or a korma sabzi or one of these broths.
Yeah, one of these stews. Yeah.
Stews and put it on top.
It softens it up a little.
It's another world, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's the best flavor ever. When you go, you know, you're Persian royalty.
Yes.
When you go to Persian restaurants, do people lose their shit?
Yeah, I get, you know, it's funny because a friend of mine, Sam Tripoli, used to say, I'm the Persian Elvis, otherwise known as Pelvis. Because he goes, whenever you do shows, all the Persians show up. And so I was the first Iranian-American comedian out the gate. And I think I started to do well. And so people were excited and they would come out and all that stuff. So it's amazing how well-known I am in the Iranian community and how I go to some other communities, they have no idea who I am at all. And it's an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, you're like, oh, this is great. I'm getting free tadig and whatever. You know, they always throw in a free appetizer or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go to somewhere else and they're like, you know, they're ignoring you. The waiter's not even paying attention. Excuse me, can I order? Oh, yeah, we'll be there. Whatever, sir. Just wait your turn. I'm like, oh, you know who I am, man? I'm Pelvis.
They treat me like a god at flame.
Yeah. No, It's nice. There's some good Persian restaurants. I love like Daria on the west side. There's Shamshiri, and then in Glendale. Actually, I'm gonna go. A friend of mine's in town, and I'm gonna go after at Rafi's place.
That's supposed to be I've never been.
Oh, it's delicious.
And I hear that it's incredible.
First of all, they have a great outdoor garden-y sitting area.
Yeah,
and then they give you these big portions of rice, and the meats are delicious. I'm going to substitute salad for the rice because, again, I'm trying to be
kebab. You know, Persian kebab places literally give you like a shovel of rice.
Oh, it's crazy!
It's crazy.
Yeah, I think rice must be. I'm guessing Trump has not put tariffs on rice. It must be very cheap because they give you a boatload of rice.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Persian kebabs are probably, if you go to a Persian restaurant, kebab is what they usually lead with. Which,
yes.
The difference between a Persian kebab and most other kebabs is the kubide, which is the ground meat, is mixed with chopped up onions.
Mm,
so
yes.
You're supposed to basically slow cook it so that the onions caramelize inside the meat.
Yes.
Which is fucking genius.
Delicious.
Which is also why you don't really get kebab medium rare or anything like that. It has to kind of cook through.
Yeah.
But the other thing that we have a lot in a lot of our cuisine is turmeric.
Yes.
Which, like, the rest of the world is just catching on to now. And like, have you heard of turmeric? I'm like, motherfucker, I was breastfeeding turmeric.
Yeah.
That also, turmeric and saffron.
Saffron. Yeah. That yellow color, bro.
Saffron is, I think, the most expensive food in the world, like pound for pound.
It sure is. As a matter of fact, in some of these stores, like your Eilat markets and these Persian markets, I'm told, my friend was saying that there's, if you want saffron, there's a guy you got to go to.
There's a separate area.
Yeah, there he's is. Got like saffron in his jacket. Like he, you know, because they don't want people jacking the saffron.
It's so true.
Yeah.
There is. There's a little separate side area in Eilat Market, and the guy's got like the expensive stuff.
Yeah.
But saffron, it's crazy because like you need to like harvest like 1,000 flowers for like one thread of saffron.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a delicious flavor though, which also I think here's the problem. We don't have our David Chang. There hasn't been the Persian young chef,
right,
who's taking Persian flavors and like just like throwing them on its head and like and upping them to like farm to table.
Well, there's that girl, I forget what her name is, but it was a Netflix series. It was called like Fire,
yes,
you know, whatever it was.
Yes.
You know, that girl's an young Iranian American, and my kids were watching that show with my wife, unbeknownst to me, they were watching and they were loving it. And she would do, I think it was like Fire and Oil, I forget what it was called.
Yeah,
and Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
That's it.
Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And she did a thing with tadig, because she was talking about how I watched that episode. I think she was saying how when you, and I never thought of this, it just blew my mind, but it was so easy, such an easy thing. She goes, when you heat something up, the flavors and the textures obviously change. So she was saying even like bread, she goes, if you just eat bread, it's one flavor, but if you toast it, it's a whole other flavor. That's why, for example, avocado toast, if you just put it on untoasted bread, you're like, ugh. But when you put it on toasted bread, you're like, mmm.
Yeah.
So the same thing with Tadig. She was doing the thing with Tadig going, look, when you burn this rice at the bottom or cook it to where it's crisp, whole other flavor. And I go, that's so true. So she's kind of an up and comer in that what the person you're looking for.
She is a little bit. There's this other young dude from New York who's mm-hmm. got an Instagram. It's like Moosh, M-O-O-S-H.
Okay. He's mouse, which means mouse.
Uh-huh. He's doing like meals at Kraft with like Tom Colicchio.
Okay.
And they're doing like, they're starting to do like fine dining-y Persian things, which I'm I saw, it. Which like looked like really, really interesting. And then there's the old school one. Do you know that her name is like, she wrote that book, like I think the best Persian cookbook out there is this, it's called New Food of Life. And her name is Najmiye Batman
Gilic.
Yes.
I know her well. Yeah.
Do you
my,
really?
Yeah. My dad knew her family and she's great. She's an amazing person. She's
like the grand dame of Persian cuisine.
She's very progressive. Her kids are, they're the guys from Vampire Weekend. One of them was, the guy from Vampire Wiki. The other one's a director.
No way.
Zal Badman Gilic and I forget the other one's name, but they're a very progressive family and she's amazing. So when I was in, so they live in D.C.
Yes.
And again, when I was in D.C. and my wife is really into this world of cooking and stuff, Najmiye did a thing where, I don't know if she still does it or not, people can look it up. She was doing a thing where I think it was, I don't know how often she does it, but she was doing a cooking class / afternoon at her house.
Yeah.
So my wife went and she said she loved it.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome. And listen,
and her books are fantastic. If anyone's looking for a Persian cookbook, New Food of Life is my go-to.
Yeah, I would say, listen, I would tell people just find a Persian restaurant in your town and go to it because the foods are really good and yeah. the people are nice and you're going to enjoy it. Order the kebabs, order the rice. Order the
Horma
sabzi, fesenjun. Order the yogurts. We have different types of yogurts, some with shallots, some with cucumbers.
Yeah. But
get into that world. And then, as you said, dive into the books, dive into, you know, there's a lot of people now because I think, again, I think when immigrants come, at first they just go, this is our thing.
Yeah.
This is how we do it.
Yeah.
But then the next generation starts going, no, we're going to mix it up. There's a guy out of D.C., I was just talking about him. He's got a restaurant called Amuz, which means uncles.
Okay.
And he took Persian food. His name's Sebastian, and he took Persian food, and he really kind of, again, turned it on his head, as you said. So, for example, we put our broths, the korma sabzi, the stews, on top of rice. Well, he said, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to, instead of putting it on rice, I'm going to take a, I think it was like a pumpkin or something. He cut it in half, not a big pumpkin, like one of these smaller pumpkins, cut it in half. And there's a center of it, and he dug the center out and put the stew in there.
Oh, wow.
So now the stew is warm, and the pumpkin's been cooked, so you dig into that,
oh,
and you
wow.
eat it together, and it's another world.
How cool.
Cool, right?
I love that.
Yeah, man.
That's a good shout-out. Now, you tour all over the world.
Yes.
And you you do a lot of shows in the Middle East.
Yeah.
There must be, like, a crazy... Like, I imagine, like, when you go to, like, Dubai, they pick you up, and then, like, you get to the... hotel and they have like a whole lamb roasting or something insane.
Well, you know, I first went to the Middle East in 2007 with the Axis of Evil comedy tour.
Yes.
It was me, Ahmed Ahmed, Aaron Kader. And it was interesting because back then, again, we were the first guys out of the gate doing comedy from our background. So that Axis of Evil comedy tour came out on Comedy Central. YouTube was just taking off. The DVDs were selling. People started, and it was you know, during the Bush administration. So a lot of Middle Easterners and Muslims and stuff were waiting for someone with this voice to speak for them. And
yeah.
we kind of were speaking for them.
Absolutely.
So when we first went to the Middle East, you know, we were doing well in America, but we landed in the Middle East and I felt like over the Atlantic, we became the Beatles. Because we got there and the guys were like, listen, we have a press conference set up. And I'm going, press conference? Who's coming to a press conference? We go to some hotel in Dubai. There's 20 different news outlets covering this. You know, what's it like being a Middle Easterner in America now doing jokes under the Bush administration, yada, yada. I was like, whoa. And then we did something like 27 sold-out shows in 30 days in 5 countries.
Wow.
So we were in Beirut, you know, Lebanon. We were in Kuwait. We were in Egypt. We were in Dubai. We were in Jordan. King of Jordan showed up at our show.
Get out.
Got invited to the palace. I mean, it was amazing.
Wow.
So ever since then—
What was at the palace? When you go into the palace, what was the food-wise? Was there tea?
I think it was just tea.
Was it a tea situation?
It was tea, yeah. It was actually kind of interesting because the lead-up to the palace— First of all, Jordan is one of the poorer countries in the region because they don't have oil.
Right.
So it wasn't so super lavish. It was just like all these checkpoints leading into the, you know, into the palace. Right. And the king himself is Western educated, super cool. And he sat down with us and talked to us, and he was nice. It was interesting because the night before when he'd come to the show, his family, some of his family was with him, and his brother was with him as well. And whenever we would do jokes about George Bush, the brother was falling out of his seat laughing, and the king was very reserved. And right. So we asked him afterwards, we go, did you not like the jokes? He goes, no, the truth is, I can't laugh as hard as my brother, because if I do, it becomes a world event that the King of Jordan was laughing at George Bush.
Absolutely.
So he was very sweet, things like that would happen, you know, because when you go to these places, first of all, we were the first group of American-based comedians who went to perform for the people of the Middle East, not for the American troops who are in the Middle East.
Right.
So I think that was appreciated. And again, it was a big fish in a small pond. Nobody was going there at that point. Now a lot more comedians are going and have gone.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to think about this. You know, when you're in L.A. and you go to perform at the clubs, we're very jaded. New York, L.A., they get to see Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, you know, Jerry Seinfeld will pop in, whatever. And there's a ton of entertainment. And the fact is, half the people are in entertainment. But when you go to these other cities, I mean, when you go to like, I don't know, when you go to Cleveland, you're the big event of the year.
Draw,
for the year. And so similarly, when you go to the Middle East, you're a big event. And so I hadn't been back, you know, after the Axis of Evil, I would go every like year to two, I would go. And it was because I, you know, there's so many other places I go that you got, you know, it takes time to come up with new material, get back. So I just went back this past December for the first time after 2-3 years. And it was some of the welcomes I got. Like when I went to Doha, I was staying at the W Hotel. The show was at the W Hotel, and I walked in and they were playing music. The staff was out to welcome me. They had these like images of me on a stick. So they all had my face above their face.
Oh my God, how creepy.
It was crazy. And I was like, whoa, you know? And they were saying one of the things they try to do is whenever they have any like artist staying there, their whole thing at the W is, you know, they say anything, anytime, you know, whatever you want. And so they were saying, you know, we want to welcome you. So, because after I came, some singer came and they were doing the same thing. I go, hey, what's up? But, you know, I will
just swap out the sticks with his face on them.
Yeah, but I did peek out and I had more people welcome me than the singer. Nobody cared about the singer.
Yeah, yeah.
No. So yeah, you are. You do get treated in a very VIP fashion.
I mean, I think I saw something on your Instagram where you went to like a club and like they had your name in lights, like welcome Maz Jobrani, but they spelled your name weird or something.
Oh yeah. That was a while ago. You're talking about the one that was a while back, or was that recent?
No, it was a while back.
Yeah, that was at, I think that was in Beirut, if I'm not mistaken. It's always funny to me when they, you know, you think it starts to get to your ego a little bit. You're like, oh wow, I am well known. And then like they misspell your name, you go, oh, I'm not that well known. And yeah, that was one of those things at the club. That's the other thing. Once in a while you beat the club. So the other thing you run into is there are some people that are hardcore fans in these countries, and there's some people who have no idea who you are.
Right.
So there's a couple times where I'd be at the club and like the hardcore fans are the people who are running the club. They'd be like, dude, come on, you gotta go do a, you know, I'm here and
DJ booth.
Yeah, like I'm Jay-Z and I'm like, what's up everybody? And half the crowd's like, who is this guy?
More from Maz in a moment, but first, a fun subset of Persian pickles is something called sir torshi. It is pickled garlic and it is otherworldly delicious and very easy to make. Take 2 cups of vinegar, a handful of dried barberries you can get at a Persian market, a little honey, a little salt, and some thyme sprigs. Boil them up, pour over as many whole heads of garlic you can fit in a jar and close. Leave it in the garage for as long as you want. It will last your whole lonely life, because while yes, it is delicious, nobody will ever want to be around you because you will smell awful. But trust me, dying alone is well worth this delicious flavor. Okay, back to the show. So we're going to get to our rapid fire questions.
Yes.
Which there's no rush to do. I don't know why we call them rapid fire questions. Just take your time.
Sure.
Slow simmer.
Yes.
What is your earliest food memory?
Earliest food memory. Oh, you know what they used to do as a kid? Somebody pointed this out to me, and it's so funny and so true. So again, we're going back to Persian food, right? Yeah. As a kid, you know, our breakfasts were, it's the naan, the bread, the soft, like a lavash or something.
Was it sangak?
I think it was sangak. Okay. Sangak, yeah. Sangak.
So sangak is a bread that is cooked over little tiny rocks.
Yes.
Which means little rock, right? Yeah. And it's the perfect ratio of crispy and soft that you can get in a bread. I think it's my favorite bread ever.
It's so good. That and barbari are beautiful.
Yeah.
And so what you would
Persian
do
Persian breads, very underrated. Like,
dude.
Like better than French breads. Like,
oh, it's amazing.
They're unreal.
Because they get that hot like fire oven, and you would go back in the day, I remember they would go to these places that sold it and they would just go get it fresh out of the oven.
Yeah.
Oh. So amazing. As a kid, you know, I'm four now, maybe five at tops, and they would give you that with the Persian cheese, which is really like a feta goat cheese kind of a thing, nice and sour. A lot of times you'd add to that either honey or the cherry jam, uh-huh, right?
Yeah.
Delicious sour cherry jam. Mm.
Yes.
So you got the sour flavor going, you got the bread, and then they would take, this is the part that somebody pointed out, we were 4 years old. They take tea, like a Darjeeling type tea, so it's obviously very caffeinated.
Yeah.
And they would pour like an inch of sugar at the bottom of it. I don't know if they did it or we did it, but that sweetness would counter that sourness, and it was just heaven.
Ooh.
And then they would send you off to school on a sugar high, fully caffeinated. I mean, nowadays I look at my kids, like my kids will be like, hey, can I get a sip of Snapple? I don't even drink Snapple myself. Can I get a sip of your Snapple once in a while? I go, no, it's got caffeine. You can't have it. Or can I have a sip of your Arnold Palmer? No, it's got caffeine. You know, meanwhile.
You're drinking espressos.
Holy moly. I mean, what the hell did they do to us?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What is your death row meal? Last meal. You committed a crime. You're going to be killed.
I mean, listen, I love, you know, a lot of foods. I recently was in Japan with my family and we ended up in Kyoto. I mean, the Wagyu beef,
Oh. Dude,
we were at this restaurant and it was a great restaurant. We're getting all kinds of different foods. And I look at the thing and it said the number was crazy. It was like, I don't know, it was like a 4 ounce or 4 ounce or 5 ounce or something for like $150, some crazy dollar amount.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there was like a 6 ounce option for like $200. And I was like, that's too much. But I go, we're here. Let's try the 4 ounce, you know,
$150.
And it was Wagyu beef A5. You know what that is?
Yeah. That's
like the shoulder or something. The guy explained to me. He goes, that's the area of the cow that's so tender. And it was like, you know, the M&M's commercial, melts in your mouth, not in your hands.
Yeah.
This thing melted in my mouth. And I told the kids, I go, guys, I just want you to know, from now on, Father's Day, birthday, just get me Wagyu beef A5. That's all I want.
It's a tall order for kids that are, well, how old are they?
Yeah, I mean, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't have the money. But yeah, come on.
Yeah, Japanese meat is something crazy. It's got like more fat than meat on it.
The Japanese are just they're perfectionists.
Yeah,
you see it in the way they dress. One thing I really enjoyed in Japan, and it's very opposite of what we do in America, and I probably am a victim of it too, is in America, we're just casual, right? You could be at a business meeting or something. You could be at a meeting where you're pitching a TV show. There's a guy in shorts.
Yeah.
And you're going, this guy's the executive? Yeah, bro. Right. Here I am, man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But in Japan?
No, they take it seriously.
Dude, they're going, the guy's going down the street to get milk. He's in a three-piece suit. And he's taking the kid. The kid's in a three-piece suit.
Absolutely.
I mean, they dress nicely. They're very perfectionists.
It's a magical place.
And they bring that to their food, man.
Absolutely. They have more pride in their food than I think anyone in the world.
Bro, other level. I mean, and when I went from the Wagyu beef all the way to, my wife was finding these places. She goes to Goop, and Goop recommends when you go to places, different places.
Yeah.
It tells you the places to go.
Yeah.
She found two other things that were interesting. Here's a pro tip I got from a few people that went to Japan. They go, don't eat the Japanese food only. Go have Italian food.
Yes. I was just going to say, they're such perfectionists. Their pizza.
Ridiculous.
Was the best pizza I've ever had in my life. Like,
ridiculous.
It was better than Italy, because that's what it is. They are such perfectionists that when Jiro starts dreaming about pizza, Luigi's out of a job.
Absolutely. The ingredients were amazing. And I keep forgetting the name of the place. I think it was like Napolitano. I forget what it was. There was a place in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Little hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And we... You know what I'm talking about?
Is it the white marble? Was there a white marble?
No, there wasn't. It was just a small, like, we thought we were in the wrong place when we first went.
Yeah.
And then we went and we started eating and we're like, this is delicious. And I thought, is this a touristy thing? And I look over and there's a Japanese woman with, I think, like a Swedish guy. And we ask them to go, we go, are you guys visiting? They go, no, we live down the street. And they go, this is one of the best places in all of Tokyo.
One of the big differences with Japanese pizza is what they do is they take a handful of salt and they throw it in the oven before they put the pizza dough on top.
Whoa.
Then they put the pizza dough on top. And then they take they shovel a little bit of wood chips and throw that in the oven to get extra smoke.
Wow.
So it's extra salty crust and extra smoky on the pizza. It's so magical. And only they could figure that shit out.
Yeah. And then we did, you know, I don't know if you've ever done this, but that place in Kyoto that we went, it was at the hotel and they did I think it was a four cheese pizza or it has some gorgonzola or something. Uh-huh. And then they brought it with honey.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm going, what's with the honey? They go, just put it on the pizza.
Ooh. Wow.
Boy, I tell you, man. That was other level
shit.
That
sounds amazing.
Other level,
that
man.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, God.
Because gorgonzola is very strong. You'd need something a little sweet to cut it.
Put a little honey in there.
Put a little honey.
Put a little honey.
What is your best high-end meal that you've ever had?
Gosh, one of my best high-end meals that I remember was at Giorgio Baldi's over there in Malibu.
I've never been.
Or in Santa Monica, wherever that location is. It's a small restaurant.
Okay.
It's going to be pricey. And it was funny because you're going to go do it right, you know? So absolutely. Get that bottle of wine that's going to go with whatever you're having. And it was very funny because they do a lot of truffle.
Yes.
I love truffle.
Oh, what's and they would
come,
love?
Yeah, and they come together and be like, okay, so you'd be like, so it literally, it'll, you know, let's say you're going to get the spaghettini appetizer for the four of you. And they'd be like, well, the spaghettini appetizer. And then you look at the menu and it's like, okay, so without the truffle, it's going to be $20. If you like the truffle on it, it's going to be $320. You're like, give me the truffle, man. Give me the truffle. And oh my God, melt in your mouth again. I mean, you know, again, when the bill came, it was one of those things where the bill comes and you go, yeah, I think this is right. You know, it's an expensive meal, but you go, well deserved.
Absolutely.
Well deserved.
That's a good one.
That's like one time, I'll tell you, this is a very different story, is I went to... I was doing an event in San Francisco at the Ritz-Carlton.
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing because I took a cab from the airport to the Ritz, and I pull up. And as soon as I pull up, the doorman or whatever, the guy at the front opens the door for me, grabs my suitcase, comes over, welcome, Mr. Jobrani. I guess, I don't know if he looked at my suitcase. I don't know if he, just right away, welcome, Mr. Jobrani. And it's not that he knew me. He wasn't a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just that he was ready. And then he took the suitcase in. As I'm going in, there's a lady standing there, and I walk towards her. Welcome, Mrs. Jordan. Can I take you to the check-in? Takes me to the check-in. Welcome. Just constantly welcome. They were. I think they were like radioing into each other, but it was all because that's how they roll. Like you could be. I don't care who you are. You could be Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
They're ready for you.
Yeah.
And as I was going to go do the show, I stopped at the bar downstairs. I was like, "Can I get an espresso?" They go, "Sure." And then they give me the bill, and it was like, you know, $12 or so, some crazy amount for an espresso.
Yeah.
I didn't blink. I was like, yes, with service like this,
absolutely,
your espressos should be $12 at least. You know what I'm saying?
The latte art had your name on it, Mr. Jobrani.
I mean, it was amazing, man.
That is fantastic. What about your best low-end meal? Like, what is your...
Best low-end meal.
Guilty pleasure.
I mean, does that sweet fin work?
Yes,
that? I mean,
absolutely.
Kind of, it's a healthy choice in terms of, like, at least I feel it's healthy.
Yeah.
And you go in there and you get the different stuff in your bowl, and it's like, you know, the black rice with the, you know, and what's great is because anyone that goes to sweet fin, again, you get a little intimidated because they give you so many options.
Yes.
So you go in and you'd be like, yeah, let me get the tuna fish with the black rice. With the whatever, the dried onions. And then they go, well, you have four more choices from the left side and three more choices from the right side. I'm like, right.
You're like, you does know. Zucchini go with with fish?
I'm like, what is ponzu? What is that a scheme? Is it a ponzu scheme? No. So what I've liked recently is they've done their, they've got a signature bowl that some celebrity chef or somebody has come up with.
Oh, fun.
So I'll always just go, give me the signature bowl.
Yeah, I get too intimidated with those places. Yeah. I always have to go with one of the standards.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going to pair well.
I know, man. Just, you know, give it to me. And by the way, whatever you give me, I'm going to be pouring a bunch of soy sauce on there. Yeah. So don't worry
about
it. It's
all going to taste like soy sauce at the end of the day.
Yeah. I'm Googling Italian restaurant in Tokyo because I want to give that suggestion.
It is something Napolitano.
I hate mentioning stuff and then saying and not being able to give that recommendation.
Give them the shout out.
Yeah. Shout out. Text my wife. She might know it because she remembers it.
And if it comes with, just we'll throw it in.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a favorite drunk food?
Favorite drunk food. Oh my God. Jeez. Well, I tend to, whenever I get buzzed, I'm not gonna say drunk, buzzed.
Yeah,
like two glasses of wine in.
I've never seen you drunk. I've seen you. I've had wine with you at the Laugh Factory. But
yeah,
that's just because Jamie just pours us huge glasses of wine.
Jamie Masada of the Laugh Factory has no idea how to pour wine. He thinks it's a Slurpee. He really does a bad job for, because he's Iranian. He's a Persian Jew. He does a bad job of changing the stereotype of Middle Eastern or whatever you want to call it, in that he thinks wine should be poured like a super size Slurpee at 7-Eleven.
Yeah, yeah.
You got it. I told him the other day, I go, you got to lower your pour, bro.
And he has these huge glasses too.
Huge glasses. I go, listen, I go, if you pour it, you take your time, you enjoy it. Two glasses in, you're like, this is pretty good. I'm feeling the buzz. And then I go to my, you know, chocolates. I love chocolate.
Yeah.
So you were asking me what's my favorite drunk food. It really, if I can just have a nice, you know, and I'm trying to go dark chocolates again because of the health type stuff. Yeah. But any kind of chocolate will do. You know, oh God, chocolate almonds are delicious.
Interesting.
You ever had chocolate almonds?
Of course.
Other level.
What kind of monster do I look like?
Dude, it's the worst thing. Because whenever I buy it, I know I'm going to eat it because my wife tries to have the kids eat pretty healthy.
Yeah.
My son doesn't like nuts, so he won't have the chocolate almonds. My daughter might get in there a little bit. My wife might take a handful. But the rest of that little box is me.
Interesting.
It's crazy.
Wait, what is it like? Do you guys have bougie chocolate almonds or just basic chocolate almonds? Or are they Erewhon chocolate?
Whatever Erewhon's selling, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Whole Foods, you know?
So is it an almond that's covered in chocolate we're talking?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You realize it's all about texture, right? It's all about getting the right texture combination.
Well, that's why I think peanut M&Ms are the perfect chocolatey, nutty. I think ratio-wise of chocolate to nut to candy coating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Holy shit.
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't get stoned that much, but the few times, like, there's been a... Like,
the few times you've hung out with Amir K.
Yeah, yeah. No more, but recently, like, I remember I was in Charlotte doing shows, and it wasn't Amir K, it was another comedian. He had some weed, and, like, we, you know, had some, and I went back to the hotel, and it was like a Hilton or something. So it was one of those where they just have the small little gift shop on the side.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of those things where I was like, I was in a good place with it. And I go, yeah, let me get the peanut M&Ms and the Pringles. And I was like, I'm gonna go upstairs and just have like a little taste test match, you know?
Wow.
And the chocolate covered pretzels.
Ooh.
Those are all great combinations.
Those are great. All great.
Yeah.
A regular pretzel I can't do, but throw some chocolate on it, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite hangover food?
Favorite hangover food really should be like a breakfast burrito or something.
Yeah.
You really need a heavy, you know, I haven't had a hangover, thank God, in a long time.
Yeah.
Because again, like I said, as you get more older and older, you get more mature with the way you drink. You know, again, I rarely now go to after parties.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be after the show, we're like announcing to people, we're going to be at such and such, let's go party. And then you go there. But the once in a while, if I end up at some bar or something after a show and there's some fans from the show, and if they're younger, a lot of times they come over, we want to buy you a shot. I go, listen, I'm 47. I don't do shots.
Yeah.
I go, you take that tequila, you pour it in with some nice ice, preferably a cube of ice, a nice big cube.
One big cube.
One big cube, and I'll sip it, and you guys can shoot it, and I'll sip it because what I'm going to do is I'm going to sip that, and then eventually once I've had a couple of those, I'm going to sip some water. And tomorrow I'm going to wake up and feel good about myself.
And they're just staring at you, mouth agape, like, so you're not taking the shot?
Yeah, I'm not taking the shot. I've literally told people, I'm like, they'll stand there like, I'm not taking the shot. I go, peer pressure doesn't work on me anymore.
If you said yes to everything like that, you'd, I mean, that's why that's why comedians die.
That's why comedians die. But also, it's like, I have no, listen, I think your metabolism slows down, yeah. Your testosterone lowers. So I'm not that crazy guy anymore where. Yeah,
you're married with kids.
Yeah, like when you were younger, you might be like, let's see where this takes us. Let's go for it. Now you're like, nah, you know, I'd like to just have a couple drinks. Maybe if I don't finish the drink, I might take it upstairs and finish it watching Colbert because I love watching his monologues because I get the world's the day's news that way.
Right.
I go, listen, if we do this in a timely fashion, I could be upstairs by 11:35 when it starts.
I'm just imagining you explaining this to these kids as they're like excited. You're like, and then Colbert starts at 11:30, so I have to be up for that.
Yeah. And then if I luck out and I time it right, I watch his monologue and then I can turn on to ESPN and watch the top 10, you know, plays of the day.
Yeah.
And I'm a happy man.
While you sip your Casamigos
or whatever you give me, Reposado, I'm happy to go.
Do you have a favorite celebrity chef? And I mean that in a broad sense. It could be like a favorite famous chef, a favorite food personality.
The truth is, I never got into the celebrity chefs. I mean, again, my kids watch a lot of these shows and stuff. My wife likes them. I never got into it as much, but I will say I've gone places where I've go, oh wow, that's great, you know, what amazing food. And you know, look, ultimately, sure, if I had the one guy I know is Anthony Bourdain,
yeah,
who, you know, God rest his soul, he even did that episode in Iran, which I loved him for.
Oh yeah, that was the most humanizing thing on Iran that I've ever seen.
Amazing. And yeah. I remember he said it in there, he goes, I've traveled the world, never thought that the people of Iran would be the most hospitable people.
Yeah.
And we really are. I mean, it's in our culture. It's a lot of people don't know that about us. A lot of Americans don't know the difference. You know, when they killed this guy Soleimani, I heard some guy talking about, he's like, yeah, you know, they got the ISIS guy, now they got this guy, they're getting rid of all these terrorists. And I'm going, okay, yes, the IRGC in Iran has been deemed a terrorist organization by the American government. Right. However, this guy Soleimani was a general in the Iranian army, and the Iranian government doesn't represent the people of Iran in many ways. The people of Iran are very different from their government. And you got to explain that all the time.
There's so much unraveling to do.
So much unraveling. And to let people know that Iranians love American and Western culture. Yeah. Iranians are very educated. Iranians are very hospitable, as I said. I don't care who they are. You show up, they're going to be, and people go, well, death, they say death to America. I go, they're not thinking about you that much. I think America thinks it's this like hot piece of ass that the rest of the world is thinking about every day.
Right.
The truth is, no, the rest of the world is just trying to, you know, go find money for that delicious bread,
right,
feed their family, and maybe watch some sports at the end of the night or whatever they want to watch.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, an American news channel will show up and point a camera at them, and they go, oh, death to America, you know, right, and that's it.
They have to say it.
Yeah, they have to say it. That's kind of it. One time I saw Ted Koppel went back to Iran. He was like outside some Friday prayer mosque thing, and he's like, I'm back in Iran after many years covering Iran. And literally, these dudes were walking past him, and I saw the surprise when they saw the cameras, and then I think they were like, oh, and they look at each other like, okay, death to America, death to, like, very almost calmly.
Right, like, on three?
On three. And I'm going, dude. So yeah, I think Americans need to understand that, first of all, the countries in the Middle East are very different.
Yeah.
The people of Iran are amazing people.
Yeah.
And so
for the most part, secular.
Very secular. They don't like religion because of the way that this totalitarian state has, you know, has taken away their human rights.
Yeah.
So what Bourdain did, I got to give it up to him for that.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed 100%. What is your desert island food? You're trapped on a desert island. There's one thing you can eat for the rest of your life.
Gourmet sabzi.
That's a great one.
It's delicious.
Gourmet sabzi is one of those Persian stews we were talking about, and it's an herb stew. So a lot of stews and European stews have like a chicken base, chicken broth base, or a beef broth base. Persians don't do that, which I kind of like because it lets all the ingredients speak for themselves.
Yeah.
But this one is just herb-based.
Yeah.
Like five different kinds of herbs, more herbs than you can imagine, chopped up. And a secret herb, which is chambellile, which is fenugreek.
Nice.
Which is something that seeps into your pores when you eat it.
I actually think that that I have had times when I've had like body odor.
Yeah.
I think it smells like gourmet sabzi.
Yeah.
I think every Persian has that. It's the weirdest thing. I think it is, you've eaten it so much throughout your life.
Yeah.
That it just sticks with you.
Absolutely.
And it's got a little bit of sourness and it's got the beans, you know, and it's just delicious.
It's the best.
Yeah.
What is there a food that you can't stand eating?
I don't like quiche. The
really?
Texture of quiche I can eat eggs, omelets, you know, scrambled, whatever. But when you put that quiche with like the base and all that, I see quiche and I go, no thanks.
Interesting. Yeah. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And I think I might know the solution.
Yes.
Here's the issue.
Yeah.
Most quiche that we have has been sitting on that counter for a while.
Yes.
So that crust gets really mealy and gross.
Yeah.
So the only solution is like a fresh quiche, which when the hell are you going to get a fresh quiche?
Or maybe overcooked the top and made the top kind of a harder, crispier texture, then maybe I would see it almost like a cake.
Yeah.
But I just, that soft.
I'm with you. The crust always comes out a little weird. Are you a fan of kuku?
I love kuku.
Yeah. So kuku is a Persian frittata, basically.
Yeah.
Again, chock full of herbs.
Yeah.
And whatever vegetable you have. And slow cooked until it collapses. Because a quiche, you cook a lot faster.
Yeah.
But a kuku, it just collapses into like just like a thick kind of egg custardy.
Yeah, and that's goodness. Another one we would eat with the breads and stuff. You know, the other thing that I don't like is liver. The Persians sometimes will, in their barbecues, they put some liver in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's really nasty. The aftertaste of liver is disgusting.
I love it.
Really?
I can't get enough of it.
No way.
That iron tinniness.
Oh, God, I hate it.
Give it to me.
Oh, no thank you.
So a liver quiche would be...
That would be like just...
Torture.
Yeah, get me out of here. I couldn't handle that.
Last question. This is my favorite question because I like to end on a furious negative note. What is... And you can have one or multiple.
Yes.
Your restaurant pet peeve.
Restaurant pet peeve. Oh, gosh. Well, number one is when the waitstaff ignores you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm here to spend my money.
Absolutely.
And so even if they come by and go, hey, I'll be right with you. Or I got to do such and such, I'll be there. Just acknowledge
my existence.
The worst is when you... And then it's the weirdest thing when you're... looking at them and they're kind of looking everywhere but you.
Yeah.
And you're going, are they intentionally doing that or are they just so zoned into whatever they're doing? So the opposite is, you know, when you have a wait staff who's just warm and there. I just had drinks with a friend of mine and this waitress was so good because we ordered some, you know, wine and she was really going out of her way to go, well, listen, before I bring you that, would you like to taste these others? So just make sure, like she was really doing a good job.
Yes.
And I said, wow, I feel like she's on it. So number one is-
What about the opposite though? When they're overly, like I can't stand the waiter who's like just too jovial and like hanging out with you, like and just checking on you too much.
Yeah, the checking on you too much is like, they got to read the room a little bit, right?
So
if you're in the middle of a story and they interrupt, that's like, you know, and I've seen some waiters be very good with that. Like they come and they see it and they walk away. And it's funny because I've been in conversations before and I'm starving.
Yeah.
And this person keeps talking. And I want the waiter to come in and be like, are you guys ready? But they don't come in. I'm like, God.
Like, I wish you were a little bit of a worse waiter.
Yeah, yeah. So that would definitely be one of my, I mean, that might be my main pet peeve. I can't think, what are some other pet peeves of the restaurant?
Do you ever do the hand up? You ever put the hand up to get the waiter's attention?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you do that. Yeah, you do that.
My dad will like yell across the room, which like makes me cringe.
Amigo, amigo.
Excuse me.
Amigo.
Amigo.
Dad, it's a French restaurant. Amigo. Come here, buddy. Let me ask you, what do you recommend for us to share?
My dad will do that too, where he'll just like start ordering from the busboy. And the guy's like, I don't.
Yeah, no English.
Be sure to follow Maz on Twitter and Instagram at Maz Giobrani. Maz, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, man.
This episode of Green Eggs and Dan was produced by Andrew Steven. Executive produced by Jeff Umbro and The Podglomerate. You can find more of their podcasts at thepodglomerate.com. The theme music is Beautiful Food by Idan, and interstitial music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Special thanks to Irios. To see pictures of Maz Giobrani's fridge, information about the restaurants mentioned in the episode, and more, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at StandupDan. If you like this show, please tell a friend, share an episode, and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Podglomerate. A Sonic Universe.